A couple years ago, I was standing in line waiting to board a plane. And as you might expect, the process was not going smoothly. Plane hadn't yet arrived. The passengers had been told to line up, and then we had to sit back down, and then we had to line up again. And it was clear that we were all going to be late, and probably some of us would miss our connections. And I had finally gotten one person short of getting to the desk where they would finally take my ticket, and the man ahead of me in line was clearly frustrated. "What do you mean you can't find my name on the standby list?" he said. "I've been waiting here for over an hour." And he raised his voice and he started arguing with the woman behind the desk. And his white face had turned red with anger. The airline assistant was getting flustered and upset, and I was getting anxious. But over the din of this loud, angry voice in front of me, I heard a different voice from inside me, the voice that said, "You should say something." Now, I must admit, that wasn't the only voice I heard within. The other voice was like, "This is none of your business. You're going to get in trouble." But I decided to listen to the first voice instead. And I reached out and I touched the man on the shoulder. And I said, "You shouldn't speak to her that way. It's not right." And suddenly the full fury of his anger was now directed at me. Maybe I should have listened to the second voice after all. But I remember he said, "And just who do you think you are? What are you, some kind of therapist, a social worker?" Like, where does that come from? I don't know. But I said, "No, I'm a minister." "And you shouldn't talk to her that way." And something in what I said was like pulling the plug out of a beach ball. My fellow passenger, all filled up with righteous anger, was deflated. And whether it was the soft tone of voice or realized that he was shouting at a minister, I don't know. It didn't matter. Because at this point in the drama, officials showed up and took the man out of line. So I've known other colleagues in ministry for whom moments like this are not uncommon. And they hear a voice that tells them to speak powerfully and sometimes prophetically in tense moments. And I would like to say that I was courageous in that encounter. But to tell the truth, I was shaking and I was fearful and my heart wouldn't stop pounding. Afterwards, the voices in my head kept talking at me the rest of my flight, and I kept thinking about all the things that I should have said or could have said, but didn't. The theme for this month is tell me a story about a time when you found your voice. And I remembered that moment in the airport because although I make my living raising my voice, it was a time when I felt like I was making a giant leap into a void, deciding to speak up instead of remaining silent, deciding to stand out instead of simply standing in line and letting the appropriate officials take care of him. So this week's service and next week's, we're going to look at the theme of tell me a story about a time when you found your voice through two different lenses. Before you can speak, you have to listen to your own voice. So in this week's sermon, I'm going to explore the voices that are in our heads, the ones that often aren't verbally expressed, but can narrate, dictate, and sometimes liberate our ability to speak when needed. Next week, on the Sunday when we reflect on the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and we're going to explore the themes of resistance and resilience, we're also going to look at the role that our voices can play, and in fact, must play, in the next chapter of our country's life. But going back to this week, I have long been fascinated by the stories of people both in the Hebrew, Christian, and Muslim scriptures who have not only heard the voice of God or Allah speaking to them, but whose actions, as a result of hearing those voices, created a nation, a movement, or a religious text revered by millions. In Judaism, Father Abraham is told by God to go forth from your native land to your father's house, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. And just like that, without any question, Abram pulls up stakes, moves to an inhospitable land, which eventually becomes the land of Canaan, now known as Palestine. Later in the Hebrew Bible, Hebrew Scriptures, Moses goes to Mount Sinai and hears God's voice telling them that he will go back to Israel and free, or go back to Egypt and free the Israelites from slavery. And in that encounter, of course, Moses tries to weasel out of it and says, "Why send me? I'm slow of speech and thick of tongue." And God simply says, "And I will be with you." So those are two emblematic stories of listening to a voice that is depicted as outside of one's own head and represented as an encounter with the divine. In Islam, the prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, had his first revelation through a visit by the archangel Gabriel, who revealed to him a verse from the Quran and commanded him to recite what became the first lines of chapter 96, which ultimately became the beginning of the Quran. And from this initial encounter, the prophet carefully listened and retained all that he heard, giving us a holy text which has inspired and guided millions. But not all voices tell us things we want to hear, right? In the Hebrew Bible, we also cannot ignore the story of Abraham and Isaac, who was commanded by God to sacrifice his own son. Or the stories in the book of Joshua, who believed it was God's will to slaughter the people of Jericho completely and utterly. Again, the voice of God. So whose voice do we listen to? And how do we know which voices are real and helpful and which ones are false and misguided? That's a task for both religious scholars and for psychiatrists and psychologists. Psychologists have long been fascinated with the stories of great spiritual leaders whose voices compel them to speak their truths. Hearing the voices of gods, ancestors, spirits is central to many, if not all, the world's religions. Think about characters like Socrates, Moses, Marjorie Kemp, Joan of Arc, Gandhi. They are all among the famous figures who have been identified as what's called voice hearers. Now, until recently, with the advent of modern psychology and psychiatry, these experiences were strongly associated with spiritual enlightenment, saintliness, creativity, and philosophical insight, as much as they were with madness or disease. And in the world of the arts, poets, playwrights, authors, essayists, all struggle with finding their voice. And some have indeed been driven to madness or to drink, trying to find the exact, perfect expression of that voice. Vocal artists know the difference between a good singer and a great one, and that difference is finding their voice, not imitating somebody else, but their own voice, the way that they express themselves that is uniquely their own. We can identify a great singer just by hearing them, because no one sings like Ella or Paul Robeson. It's not just their sound, but how they're able to channel their life experience, their personality, and their own particular take on a song that is in their voice. All of us hear voices all the time. But the bigger question is, what is that voice telling you? I ran across a newly released book. It's called The Voices Within, The History and Science of How We Talk to Ourselves. And it's by a professor of psychology, Charles Fernyhoff. And he states the obvious, and then he asks us some provocative questions. He says, everybody talks to themselves. Everyone hears voices in their heads. Inner voices are a fact of ordinary life. They grumble and chastise and offer up opinions, though to what extent differs from one person to the next. But then he wonders, how and when did these voices first enter our heads? Do young children hear voices the same way adults do? What distinguishes the inner voices that we all hear from the auditory hallucinations of schizophrenia? What's the relationship between the pathological hallucinations and the exalted experiences described by medieval mystics who believed that they were hearing the voice of God? Well, many years ago, I had to take a battery of tests in preparation for ministry. And one of the tests was to screen for mental, emotional, and spiritual fitness for this vocation. And after the test results came in, the psychologist came into the room and he said, test scores were really high on emotional and mental health, except for one puzzling anomaly. I was nervous. He said, on the question, do you hear voices? You answered yes. But all your other answers would not seem to indicate mental illness. So why did you write yes? Well, I said, I do. I hear voices all the time, don't you? And good psychologist that he was, he said, well, tell me about the voices that you hear. I said, I hear the voice of injustice crying out to be heard, and I hear the voices of the hurt and the broken and the lost and the lonely who need to be restored to wholeness, and I hear my own voice speaking to me in the silence, challenging me to do the next scary thing. He held up his hand. Like, oh, I get it. You're one of those. He said, we were screening for voices that talk back to you, like from the television set. Not voices in your head. Everybody's got voices in their own heads. So, if the purpose of our religious and spiritual practices is to help us live an authentic life, then how do we know the voices in our heads are the ones we should listen to? Given the fact that we all hear voices from our ancestors, parents, friends, critics, voices of the oppressed, voices from stories, songs, TV, movies, politicians, how do we sort out what's true and what's not? Well, it's not my intent this morning to talk about psychosis, schizophrenia, or auditory hallucinations, because that's an area better left to the mental health professionals. And many of you in this room who practice in the helping profession could tell me stories about clients and patients you've treated who hear voices that do not necessarily lead them to composing a symphony or designing a great cathedral. Because more often than not, those voices are painful and destructive to the person and to those around them. And many who carry that diagnosis actually hear more than one voice, more like a crowd. In her book, When God Talks Back, T.M. Luhrmann wrote, quote, I remember a man who told me that he could count 17 voices that he heard throughout the day. And when I asked him how his medication helped, he gave me a defeated look and then turned away. When I take my medication, he said, my head gets clear enough that I can decide what kind of soda I want to drink. Hearing voices for most of us doesn't mean we have a mental illness, but still, it's worth asking ourselves what kind of voices we hear and where do they come from. And in the quote I just offered you from the book by Luhrmann, When God Talks Back, it's a little deceiving because it's not a book about mental illness, but it's a book rather about prayer. Luhrmann is a Unitarian Universalist raised cultural anthropologist who was interested in how the evangelical faith traditions experience and teach their prayer practices of, and whether they have an actual experience that literally matches their descriptions of prayer as talking with God. So she asked permission of a particular evangelical community called the Vineyard to be a participant in their community for a 2-year period, attending small groups, talking to their members, and seeing if she could have the same experience that they were having. What she found out is that through the techniques of deep internal listening, mental imagery akin to guided meditation, and a profound desire for a personal relationship with God, many members of the Vineyard can vividly and believably and rationally describe their prayer life as a conversation in which God is experienced as talking back. Maybe that is true for some of you as well. And even though I identify as a Christian with the Christian tradition and engage in prayer, I cannot say that is literally true for me. But something does happen when I pray. And I do hear voices. I'm not ready to believe that they are God literally, talking literally and directly to me. But at the same time, who knows how God talks? We're very comfortable with poetic imagery about hearing voices through the natural world. And so if the trees and the rivers can speak to us metaphorically, maybe God can in all that comes up in us and from inside when we are silent and centered. So what voices do you hear in your silent times of meditation or reflection or prayer? How do you discern the voices that you should be listening to, the ones that you should ignore? And why is it we so often listen to the wrong voices? The ones who tell us that the color of our skin is too dark or too brown, or our noses are too wide, or our hair's not straight enough. The ones who told us that we couldn't sing or shouldn't try. The ones who told us we were too fat or too thin or not smart enough or not good enough. The ones who shamed us and blamed us just for being who we are. We don't have to listen to those voices. We can listen to other voices. Voices like prophets, James Baldwin, poets like Rita Dove, or hopefully you can hear other voices too, like the ones described in Chris Young's song that Jay played this morning, your father's voice, perhaps in a rare moment of emotional vulnerability, who says, I'm so proud of you, or the voice of your beloved who says, I love you exactly the way you are, or maybe the voice of your God, or the voice of your highest values speaking back to you, telling you exactly what you need to hear and will provide you with the courage to do it. The point of having a religious and spiritual life is to develop and deepen your ability to hear these deepest, oldest, truest voices, the ones that call you to your best, most courageous self. One of the reasons why I believe we attend this fellowship is to continue to find our own voice, empowered by and encouraged by our deepest listening, the voice that is supported by the values by which we shape the life we have been given. By extension, help to shape the world into a more just and compassionate place. Mary Oliver's poetry has become like scripture for many Unitarian Universalists for good reason, because her keen eye and poetic voice reminds us of how important our own voice is. So I'm going to leave you now with just a reprise from Mary Oliver's reading, the last stanza of her poem, as a prophetic and powerful parting. Little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheet of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own. It kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. May it be so.